listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm Brad Powers filling in for Jonas Knox. 200 stations, coast to coast. If you listened yesterday, Laryngitis Show Part 1. Today will be Laryngitis Show Part 2.
No. This is the Godfather about 2 months after getting shot. His voice is almost there, but you can just have a little hint. Something ain't right.
I'm a superstitious man.
See, I sound better than that now.
Yeah, you do.
All right, so we're good.
Yeah, we got a great show lineup for you guys. Obviously, recapping last night's NBA action. We'll be talking all this Scott Foster referee talk for tonight's game 2 of the Warriors and the Rockets.
And,
of course,
what's nice about that is we've got the objective numbers.
Yeah.
And we can talk about Harden's opinion. We can talk about other people's opinion. We've got the numbers. And they do raise an eyebrow.
They certainly do. But first, let's recap last night. The big game, at least the big upset, game 2. The Philadelphia 76ers going to Toronto, and the first time in 4 seasons get a win in Toronto. 76ers pull the upset, tie the series 1-1. Steve Fezzik, we do have, not in studio, but on the line. Fez, what was your major takeaway from that game last night?
Well, kudos to Philadelphia for making some great defensive adjustments for this game. They put Embiid on Siakam, who killed them in game 1, and that certainly paid dividends. Siakam had a bad game versus game 1, and ultimately Philly was able to shut down Toronto last night.
And speaking of shutting down, I mean, Toronto, and we like to look at this, you know, because RJ likes to say this, there's a certain, you know, luck factor maybe when it comes to shooting. Toronto hits 36% from the field last night. Second worst performance in the last 89 games. That's the entire season. Second worst performance for the Raptors. But I'm going to go after you, Fez. You said last night in your handicap, one of the reasons you were on the Toronto side was the bench. Bench being a major advantage for Toronto. I don't think anyone would argue that'd be the case. Philly is not a very deep team. But the big takeaway I took, I don't know if it's sustainable moving forward, Philly outscored Toronto's bench 26-5. So regardless of Fez's love for Van Vliet, I mean, no show by the Toronto bench. What was your take on that, Fez?
Well, I've always talked about how Van Vliet I have valued as being worth a full point. It's hard to value a player being worth a point, Brad, when he doesn't score any points. So Van Vliet bagels, goes 0-2, still waiting for Ibaka to show up, or Powell. Just a horrific day for the Toronto bench, and one of those weird occurrences where the team Philadelphia, with arguably the worst bench in the playoffs, outplays Toronto's bench.
Yeah, and you got to wonder, this does feel like an aberration, a fluke, when you've got, you know, the team shooting so poorly. Because when a team shoots poorly, it could be the defense, but usually it's a little bit the defense and a little bit, hey, they had a bad shooting day.
Yep.
And if you look at Philadelphia, Embiid attempted only 7 shots. So maybe the most valuable player on the 76ers is obviously not 100%. They have a history of not winning in Toronto. They go into Toronto and win with Embiid only shooting 7 times. I mean, on one hand, it feels like a fluke. On the other hand, it feels like, wow, this could be a series swinger, because they won even without all the advantages Philly could potentially have, meaning Embiid playing well.
Yeah, and the word is Embiid right now, at 25 years old, RJ, is getting 6 treatments per day on his knee just so he could go out there. I think we fully have to question his status moving forward as the series goes deeper and deeper.
Yeah, so the theory is that something like this doesn't get better. Yeah, but that's the thing. They find one of those 3 days off in between games, maybe skip one game, and now he's got 5 days off. Who's to say? Meaning, I hear you, but I wouldn't necessarily write him off. I mean, do you think we've seen the best of Embiid?
We haven't. That's why I was saying.
But what I'm saying is, based on his current state, do you expect him to play worse moving forward than he's played up to this point? Because it sounds like it. Do you think it's an injury that just gets worse?
No, I couldn't say that. I don't think we don't know, is what
I think
saying.
It's a big question mark for sure. RJ Bell straight out of Vegas. Fezzik on the line. He's in quarantine. He's got the flu. Brad Powers. I want to talk about, you know, and I listen, Jonas is back tomorrow. Well, we can't save this. And longtime listeners know Jonas has a personal problem with Colin Cowherd. I don't know what it's about. I don't get involved. But I do disagree with something Colin said today. He was saying process or something like that. Oh, look how goofy that process was. What they need, and talking about Philadelphia, what they needed all along was players. They got Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler had nothing to do with the process. And now look how well Jimmy Butler played. Jimmy Butler had nothing to do with the process. What is the process? And again, it's become a cliche, but the idea of we have a long-term goal, and even if we lose some games in the short term, as long as that contributes to the long-term goal, we're happy. I mean, I think that's a fair way to explain the process. Well, how did they get Jimmy Butler, the Sixers? By trading away assets, right? So that's always a debate. Do you want to have a team or do you want to have a collection of assets? And these new age analytics guys are like, until we're ready to win, the team part doesn't mean as much. We want assets. Because even if this one guy might play a little better with the current team, we want the guy that's got a greater asset value. Because we're probably not going to have this guy on the team in 3 years anyway. We're going to trade him. We're going to do something with him. And the only way they got Jimmy Butler was because they traded away assets. So now you could say that the culmination of the process, the way that it matured, would have been different under the former GM. But in general, it was accrue assets and then get ready eventually to win, however you can manipulate those assets. Brad, isn't that what they did, the Sixers, to get Jimmy Butler?
That is what they did. And also on top of that, being able to trade assets to get a player like that, by also having the process getting young players like Simmons and Embiid, you're more attractive as a destination for free agents to come your way. That is also part of the process.
I mean, think about it. Is Philadelphia was one of the worst teams in the NBA when the process started. For them, 5 years down the road, to be a top eight team, as they are right now, that seems like a success to me. Like if you're number 28, 29, 30, 31, and I say, I've got a plan in 5 years for us to be top eight, I think most teams like a Minnesota or a lot of these teams, Sacramento that's been bad for so long, would sign up for that. The idea that we're looking back on the process in hindsight and sneering, boy, I think that's missing a key point.
I do. And I mean, it'd be like the Cleveland Browns going from their 1-31 two seasons to a team that's capable each year of winning 9 or 10 games. I think any fan would sign up for that, RJ.
Well, as a Steelers fan, let's see the Browns do it first. But but theoretically, I hear you.
All right, moving along, the other game last night, game one, Denver at home takes care of Portland 121-113 to go up 1-0 in the series. Fez, major takeaway from the game last night.
Well, I think it's Denver center. Jokic just had a tremendous advantage mismatch against Portland's centers. He went for 37 points. He was plus 16 and plus minus. So a Denver team that should have been tired because they're just off that seven-game epic series against San Antonio, but Jokic just too much for Portland to contain.
All right, so Jokic, if you're a sports fan, you've heard the name. If you're not a league pass guy, You probably haven't seen him play too much. Explain to us, Fez, what is it about him on the offensive side of the ball, which is not unique, but uncommon in the modern NBA?
Well, he's a really good shooter. He can shoot threes. He can bang. He's a big boy, RJ. He can bang underneath, and he's a great passer. So he's got a triple threat combination that just is dynamite for the offense. And he's being guarded by a guy, Enes Kanter, for Portland that has a dislocated shoulder. And that's going to be a major problem all series long.
So do we look at, you know, one of the premises we've had during the NBA playoffs is that the bookmakers are not on top of the player props on the game-by-game, situation-by-situation level. And we've had, we're 2-0 on our, oh my God, this is a great play, props this year. We'll probably have a couple more, hopefully. And Jokic, in these situations where maybe his season average is going to be the starting point on his over-under points, on the prop, do you think there's going to be some real opportunities because the matchup is so good against Portland?
Yeah, I do believe so, and I'm kicking myself for not looking up what his number was last night. I think it was in the high 20s, but it would not surprise me, RJ, if we don't see Jokic going for 30 basically every game in this series.
All right, so that's something next game for Denver. We'll make a point to take a look at that. RJ Bell straight out of Vegas. That's Fezzik on the line. Brad Powers announcing the show today with a big smile. I want to give Denver some credit. And this is a team, let's be candid, we did it too. There was a sense of, oh, altitude, oh, you know, advantage during the regular season, all those back-to-backs. The opponent almost had a schedule loss, as they call it. Not having the big, big names. But the second seed, I mean, they were fighting with Golden State with the first seed. But then Golden State comes in on that big game and kills them. You're dismissed kind of feeling. Game two against the Spurs at home, down 0-1. Denver's season was on the line.
Yep.
They were down how many points?
19 points with like 5 minutes left in the third quarter.
They won. Game four, down double digits. Almost a must-win game. One. They went into game seven against the most accomplished coach in the NBA. This was a new game seven situation for most of Denver, the Denver coach included. They win. Now, in a spot that I thought was horrible in game one for Denver, situationally, they win. I mean, Fez, to what degree, and maybe let me ask you an objective question first. How much have you increased Denver's power rating from the start of the playoffs?
Just half a point, RJ.
How could that be?
I didn't upgrade them at all for beating the Spurs.
Well, first of all, let's get something straight. You had the Spurs winning that series.
I thought they had an excellent chance to beat Denver, yes.
No, whoa. Are you like on, he's like on a lawyer stand here or something. Let me ask you one more time. Who was your pick in the San Antonio-Denver series?
I bet the Spurs plus 200 and I lost.
Okay, so by definition, Denver winning exceeded your expectations.
Very slightly.
You notice the delay. Listen, this is not a satellite phone, guys. This is Fez just paused trying to come up with an answer. So how can Denver not get credit for that?
Well, they were life and death to be able to get the win in seven games. Like you said, they had to come back from double digits in games two and four. They could.
That's a sign of a team growing.
There's no doubt, and I do think that they're improving. And I got to give you accolades here, RJ. You nailed this because you said, oh, this Denver lack of playoff experience really could cost them. But this team has responded much better than we expected to adversity so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Fez is a little reluctant here to give credit where credit's due. I think that's the definition of life. You're going to face times where you're facing something new, and it could be your downfall. But if you're able to overcome that, not only do you advance, but you got that experience in your back pocket. Been there, done that. Next time, it won't be as daunting. And I'm not sure what's going to be daunting for Denver next. I'm not sure that happens until potentially they face Golden State in the finals of the Western Conference. Maybe that's daunting, but I think this series, there's nothing Denver could face that's going to feel bigger than what they faced against San Antonio. When we come back, we're going to tell you exactly with the numbers why Scott Foster refereeing tonight means a lot in this Houston Golden State game.
Straight out of Vegas on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Straight out of Vegas, I'm Brad Powers filling in for Jonas Knox, RJ Bell in the house. Getting better, RJ. That first segment, I'd put you about, yeah, I mean, you're definitely more probable. You're in that 85-90% range, which is better than most, even at 85-90%.
In the business, they call me a red light performer. That light goes on, all the problems, well, not all of them, but some of them disappear. You can forget about them. By the way, we have fun each weekday, bringing the fun of Vegas straight to you. Right now on the Strip, 79 degrees. Neon is flowing.
All right. We teased it at the last part of the segment. The talk of pretty much the country today, if you listen to the Colin Cowherd shows of the world, Scott Foster tonight, the referee, Game 2, Houston Golden State, getting a lot of publicity. And we, unlike most, have the data behind it. As far as his impact tonight, hasn't been a good look here in the last six games for the Rockets.
Well, good look as in what effect has Scott Foster had on these games? Because what we know for sure is there's a whole universe in the NBA that we are oblivious to. The idea that this guy has a problem with that player and maybe it's a personal problem. Maybe it's, oh, well, this player uses the left-hand push-off more, and this certain referee calls it more than others. We don't know, but we know if you do the computer database analysis, there seems to be certain refs that do, or teams that do well with certain refs, and then they don't do well with others. Some of it could be fluky, small sample. Some of it is meaningful. Brad, you've got this Foster, these Foster numbers, they seem quite meaningful.
Yeah, it does seem meaningful, even though it's only six games. We're talking six playoff games, the last six that Scott Foster has refereed Houston games in the playoffs. Houston is 0-6 straight up, losing.
So let's be clear, this is the 17-18 season.
Yep, last 2 years.
So this is with Harden,
yep,
with Paul, Houston.
Houston, 0-6. The Rockets are straight up losing those games by 16 points per game against the spread, 1-5 against the number. And compared to expectation being the Vegas line, Houston has come up short the last six games with Foster by 17 points per game.
Now let's say that one more time. So these aren't arbitrarily six games. These are the six games. Scott Foster, the referee, who's refereeing tonight, refereed Houston games. Houston hasn't won a game. They're 0-6. Now, you might say a bunch of close losses, right? They lost by 16 points a game.
Yep.
Then if you look at the spread, 1-5, and they're about 17 points short Houston is against the spread. I mean, what effect could be 17 points? Now, you might say, well, Houston, maybe they lost a lot of games that way. In the other games in the playoffs for Houston, those 2 years, Houston's 21-7 straight up. So if there's one variable, Scott Foster, yes, he's there, 0-6. No, he ain't, 21-7. And now you have Harden saying explicitly this guy's biased. So it's obviously something Houston's thought about. Now the question is, and Colin made this point today, is this something they knew Foster was reffing game two and they wanted to get the discussion started? Or was this a situation where once Houston started the discussion, the league came in and said, you want to cause trouble, here comes Scotty Foster? I'm not sure on that one. Fez, do you have any idea when the referees for these games are assigned?
Well, I know it's announced today, but I do not know, RJ, if it's pre-assigned. You would think it would have to be with travel schedules, right?
Yeah, to some degree, that makes sense. But how many days ahead do they have to be? I don't know. That's something we might want to look into. But regard, I guess to some degree, it's irrelevant because what we have coming to a head here is a Golden State-Houston game two, which seems so focused on the refereeing, the way that the game is being called. And we probably have the one ref that's been most extreme in the results with a given team. Not saying Foster's trying to do this. I don't know. But I do know that when you're 21-7 one way and 0-6 another, and when you're 0-6, you're losing by 16 points a game, it feels meaningful to me. So, Fez, let me ask you the question. We're straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell. We're talking to Steve Fezzik on the line. I always ask this whenever we talk about conspiracies or things that aren't necessarily certainly something that affects things. Maybe it affects it, maybe it doesn't. Would you bet this Houston game without considering that Scott Foster is a ref? Meaning if somehow, some way Foster came down with stomach flu and he was announced out of this game, would that change your opinion on the game?
It would. And I got to be honest, RJ, I bet Houston yesterday before I had the Scott Foster news, and now new information comes in. I'm not nearly as bullish on my bet. Obviously, that minus 17 against the spread margin in the playoffs of Houston when Scott Foster is refereeing, there's two impacts here. There's the way the game's been reffed, and I think between the years, Hal Harden and how Chris Paul are reacting to Scott Foster as well.
Brad, as a fan, how much of the, because to some degree, if the referees are the story, it kind of takes away from the game. To another degree, it feels like this is the culmination, or at least the next step, of all the analytically driven approaches, because Houston tries to exploit weaknesses. If it's the way games are reffed, if it's free agency, whatever it is. Golden State's a little less heavy-handed about it, but Golden State tries to influence the refs as much as anyone, tries to figure out what they can get away with. It feels like these two teams deserve this being the storyline because they go along, you know, doop-de-doop-de-doop, all smiley, but in truth, they're trying to play every angle.
It does. And I don't – look, I think the NBA would rather the series between two of their best teams, the Rockets and the Warriors, being the major storyline, or do they? Because I would add all this intrigue about Scott Foster because it's such a big storyline. Does that add – to the drama of the game? Does that actually, you know, result in more viewers?
Yeah, I think maybe beforehand, but anything that makes the calls into question, the final score. I mean, if you think back to the old Tim Donahue scandal, and what's funny is if you go read up on that, Scott Foster and Donahue were allegedly best friends, talking multiple times a day, having 30, 40-second phone calls. You know, who knows what that's about? But the fact is, Foster was in that conversation 10 years ago, and he somehow survived. So to me, he either has pictures of, you know, both of the commissioners, you know, nudie pictures, or Foster was legitimately not doing anything wrong, because I'm not sure how you survived this long if you were doing something wrong with all the scrutiny that came with Donahue. But Foster, I've heard the Foster name in more stories of referees than probably every other referee combined, which is interesting. We'll say that. But I think the thing about the Donahue scandal, and I was in the middle of it way back when, if the outcome of these games feels anything but legitimate, the whole point of the game goes out the window. So, yes, I think the drama's a nice thing for the league, but not drama about is this a valid final score? Because if it's not, what are you fighting for, right? Oh, they won the title, but oh, it was a crock. No one wants that.
Can I go contrarian here?
Yes.
Because all this data is out here about Scott Foster being so negative against the Rockers, the Rockets. Is it, do we see something different completely? He goes the other way subconsciously or no?
I think if he was a younger referee, we've seen the same thing with Duncan and different refs years ago. Once it becomes a story, they seem to revel in it. Like, I'm making my calls the way I make them, and I don't care what anyone says. My sense is no, but, and I think Foster's been around. He's taken enough heat in different arenas. It feels like he's going to be who he is.
And one more data point that might support James Harden having a beef with Scott Foster. 265 games James Harden has played the last 3 years. He's fouled out four times. Four out of 265. Three of those four were refereed by Scott Foster.
Just a coincidence, maybe. All right. Maybe. When we come back, and it's just 1 minute, we're going to talk about some of the Vegas takeaways now that the NFL draft aftermath is settled. First, Dan Beyer.
Guys, two game twos tonight, as you've been talking about. Celtics and Bucks, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Rockets and Warriors, 10:30 Eastern time. I'm sure the Spurs would want to play in one of those game twos, but they're home for the rest of the offseason. Head coach Greg Popovich, though, getting a new 3-year contract to remain the coach of the Spurs. This, according to ESPN, Popovich will enter his 24th season as the Spurs head coach next season, making about $11 million per year. He's the highest paid coach in the NBA. The Indianapolis Colts have agreed to terms on a deal with running back Spencer Ware. This note from college football. Fenway Park in Boston will host the new college football game beginning after the 2020 regular season, featuring schools from the ACC and the American Athletic Conference. That's according to Stadium Sports. The new budget for the 2028 Olympic Games in LA has increased by $700 million. Organizers say the new budget had to be adjusted because of inflation, so now the estimated budget is $6.9 billion to host the 2028 Summer Games. Finally, Kentucky Derby favorite Omaha Beach will start Saturday's run for the Roses from the 12th post as a 4-1 favorite. Guys, back to you.
It's Danny B, straight out of Vegas. I'm RJ Bell, recovering day two of the laryngitis. Feeling a little better. Brad Powers, Steve Fezzik. Fez, let's ask you, and this is the topic, this segment. What was the aftermath of the draft? Now, tomorrow, we got Colin Cowherd did his top 10. And boy, there's some items to disagree with. Colts, the second best team in the NFL. The Saints, not even in the top 10. Fez should have a field day with that. That said, you really can't power rank these teams, Fez, unless you decide what the draft really means. Open-ended question, what was the biggest takeaway from you, the biggest effect of the draft?
Well, let's talk about the two NFL teams that grab what's likely going to be starting quarterbacks for them down the road, the Giants and Washington. RJ, I'm not sure whether these were good drafts, good picks for those teams long term. Both those teams could well win the draft eventually because of those picks. However, in 2019, I'm a short-term guy. I want to make money in the short term. I tend to look downward upon one-year projections for teams that take quarterbacks like the Giants did with Jones, like Washington did with Haskins, even though I like the pick, because I don't think that those rookie quarterbacks are going to be better than the incumbent quarterback, and there's a distraction first year that they're in with the team.
Now, this is where you and I just disagree. I mean, diametrically opposed. Because on one hand,
Crossfire.
On one hand, I agree with you, and I think the Jones situation is going to make my point that if the starter, the incumbent, Eli in this case, is better, then Jones is going to sit on the bench. So there's an opportunity cost. Oh, they could have gotten a better player or one that would have contributed with that pick. But all it does is, you know, you could look at Flacco this year and say he was pressed a little bit with Lamar Jackson, and Flacco, before he got hurt, was having one of his better years recently. So even if you don't play as a first-round pick and the incumbent plays, that motivation's a factor. But let's call that a wash or whatever. But it's Washington, it's that situation. The idea that you just don't have any quarterback. And now you got a lottery ticket. This quarterback might be really, really good. And he might be really good, like year one. I mean, when was Watson taken? Right? 10 or whatever?
Yeah, 13th, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he was really, really good. If we knew for sure, oh, Watson, we knew he was going to do that, well, he wouldn't have been taken 13th. So it feels like you have a bad situation. Well, who's Washington's projected quarterback, Fez?
Case Keenum.
All right. So where do you put Case Keenum, 1 to 32?
29.
Okay. So aren't we saying that it's only upside here? That if Haskins comes in and plays great, then maybe he's the 20th best quarterback.
Oh, there's an upside, but there's also the downside that Haskins.
But why would they start? Why would they start him if he's not playing as well as Keenum?
Because Washington's probably going to have a losing record, and they're going to want to see what Haskins can do in his first year, regardless of whether Keenum plays lousy or average.
Well, why would they have signed? I mean, it just feels like they could have kept Colt McCoy and drafted a quarterback if they were going to approach it that way.
I think Colt McCoy with the broken leg, I don't know if he's ever going to be right, RJ.
Yeah, but why? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Is Keenum on was that a 1-year contract with Denver, or is that still the same contract?
I am not certain.
All right, because, I mean, Brad, maybe look that up, because my sense is Keenum's not cheap. And if Keenum's not cheap, you don't bring him in just to say whoever we draft is going to play no matter what. So I guess there's two ways to look at this. And there's chocolate and vanilla ice cream, as we say. On one hand, if they're going to play the rookie no matter what, there's a chance that rookie stinks. And if he stinks, it's a downgrade at quarterback. You got that info?
Yeah, it's only a 1-year, $3.5 million. He's a unrestricted free agent next year, RJ.
Okay, so 1 year, three. So that Denver deal must have just been a 1-year deal, yep. Then. Okay. Or what happens is, well, Fez, why don't we let you do you not see my side at all of this?
Oh, I absolutely see your side that the upside for these teams is a significant upgrade. However, I really think there's a real chance that you could have a situation where Washington is 4-6 and Haskins just plays the rest of the year and he's just not ready and they just let him get reps, RJ.
And remember, guys, when we're talking about teams at this point, months and months before the season, it's usually about their season results. Once you get into the season, it's more about the week-to-week results. RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, we got Fezzik on the line. What was another takeaway you saw?
Well, I think that I can't ignore the marketplace absolutely embracing New England with all of their picks, and they love what New England did. RJ, I spoke about you never see initial reactions to the draft in the marketplace, but New England's season win number, it went up by a full half game right after the draft.
And to me, that doesn't make a ton of sense because the advantage New England had was having all the picks.
And already publicly available, exactly. All that information. Well, the response to their picks has been extremely bullish. New England's projected now to win 11 or more games. There's actually vigorous on the over.
Yeah, so I think everyone kind of said, oh, wow, look at all these players New England's getting. But that was information we knew before. I don't think we're in a position, or even the best, you know, the biggest bettors in the world, to critique the players they took. It's rather they have so many shots at it that they only got to hit 3 or 4 of all their picks, let's say, are starters, and that's a big upgrade for a Super Bowl.
And who would you trust to hit on those picks other than Belichick? He's got to be right up there with the best.
Though some people say he doesn't draft great, but he develops people later, you know, so that's interesting. All right, when we come back, we're going to break down all of tonight's TV games, which you need to know about them to bet them or watch them.
Straight out of Vegas on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Straight Outta Vegas, I'm Brad Powers, filling in for Jonas Knox. Steve Fezzik on the line, RJ Bell in the house, getting better by the minute here. I expect you 100% tomorrow, RJ.
You know, I was fading a little bit there that last segment. So sometimes in life, you overdo it and you have setbacks, Brad.
You'll be fine. But we got a couple games we're going to preview here, RJ. But before I get into this Boston and Milwaukee game two, I want to talk about the bet the three of us had about 2 months ago, right around the NBA All-Star game. At that time, there was four teams in the East that all had the same odds to win the East. They were the Bucks, the Celtics, the Raptors, and the 76ers, and we had a draft. And Fezzik went first. He laid a little bit of a premium. He went first. And who did you take to win the East, Fez?
Fear the deer. I took Milwaukee.
And I got to say, for those listening out here, the last 2-3 weeks, Milwaukee obviously clinches the one seed. They have a really good regular season. Fez is doing some strutting here. He's pointing, laughing at me.
Well, first of all, howdy doody doesn't strut. He he bobs.
Okay, bobbing back and forth like he's like on the tight wire.
Exactly.
But he's still got that smirk on his face, and he's kind of
like, you know, howdy doody.
Yeah, pointing and laughing at me because I took the Celtics. RJ just sat back and let us pick, and we had to lay a heavy vigorish while RJ sat back and took the Raptors. Fez, I do find it peculiar after 2-3 weeks of you, you know, with that smirk on your face, Celtics crushed the Bucks in game one, and you haven't showed up to the studio since. Similar to when OKC went down to the Blazers, you came up missing in action because of losing action for a couple days, Fez. How do you answer to that?
Perhaps my health has been compromised by losing a few sports bets.
Let's just say this. Fez is very sensitive, delicate.
No, wow, no comment. Let's see if we can get...
Let's get into the game.
Yeah, game two tonight. Bucks at home. A 7.5-point home favorite. Fez, who do you got tonight?
Right, I'm going to lean to Boston. Bobblehead Fezzik is concerned about Milwaukee being overrated by the marketplace. Let's face it. Milwaukee played hard all year long. They took no nights off. They won 60 games. They had that great point differential. Outscored opponents by 9 points per game. Way better than Boston that only outscored their opponents by 4.5 points per game. So Milwaukee was 4.5 points better during the regular season. But now it's playoff time. And, yeah, Milwaukee got a dream draw, and they got to crush Detroit. Those were like regular season games, and they didn't let up in those games either. Now they're playing a true contender, and I got to tell you, Milwaukee -7.5, that looks like one big point spread for two teams that were discussing who's going to win the series. I'll lean Boston.
So this is a great example of the zigzag. Explain the zigzag, and then tell us what the line was in game one of this series compared to tonight.
Yeah, so the zigzag calls for whoever loses in game one to turn around and win game two and certainly cover game two. So game one, Milwaukee was laying 7.5 to 8 points against Boston, and Milwaukee got crushed by 22. So you say to yourself, wow, a team that underperforms that much, I expect the point spread to go down, but it doesn't. It's still 7.5 here in game two, and the reason being is that the marketplace expects Milwaukee to bring maximum effort after losing game one, RJ.
Yeah, so now the question, so what, with the fact the line hasn't gone down at all with Boston showing a dominant performance, is a sign they think Milwaukee has the motivational edge. Maybe. But the question with Milwaukee is they played that game, game one, like a regular season game. And one of the things as we segue into this Golden State game, we're going to see with Golden State, they don't play postseason games like regular season games. They have Durant playing 9 extra minutes. They have Curry playing 4 extra minutes. Relative to the regular season average, Clay played 7 extra minutes and Green played 8 extra minutes. Milwaukee, minutes were all the same. Now, what's really the difference? Well, it's how much you're playing your bench, but also how much small ball you're playing. We know small ball works in the NBA if you have the players. It's just a grind. It's hard to play small ball over the course of a season. So you got to use it judiciously. And Golden State started using it early, game one, a ton, which is surprising Kerr doesn't usually do that. Milwaukee wasn't going small any more than usual. I wonder if they make that change tonight. I think it's the most important factor in this Milwaukee game. Does the new rookie coach understand how you need to change for the playoffs?
Game two.
And I don't know if Budenholzer can change much because Brogdon's still not playing, so his starting guard is still missing for this game.
So Fez is saying maybe they can't go small because of injuries. If so, another reason to like Boston.
And game two now, Fez, Western Conference semifinals. Warriors, a 5-point home favorite. Who do you got tonight, Warriors Rockets?
You got 1 minute, Fez.
Yeah, I like Houston. You nailed it, RJ. Heavy fatigue rating, all the Golden State starters playing excessive minutes, and I think it's telling that Curry played the fewest excess minutes in game one. I don't think Curry's ankle is right. I still like Houston.
Here's the thing, guys. I don't think I've ever seen a game two be this much of a must win. Because after this game, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off, next game is Saturday, right?
Yep, Saturday night.
So if you're playing your players extra minutes, and then once it's Sunday to Tuesday, okay, we can see there's going to be ramifications from that. But if you have 3 days off in between the games, it doesn't matter how much you play, your players are going to be rested. So if Houston doesn't get this win, Golden State's going to be able to play their players extra for game one and two without any consequence. I think that's a huge problem. Watch it tonight and see if I'm right. We'll be back tomorrow. Next up, The Odd Couple. I'm RJ Bell.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com.